Investors jumped all over themselves this week into U.S. shares at fire sale prices. The Dow Jones Industrials blasted higher over 500 points. Welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone, your one-stop source for all of your investing and financial needs. Well, on this long Easter Passover holiday weekend, we have two more big guest interviews with their thoughts on the cryptos and, of course, gold and silver. Bix Weir is my first guest. He joins me from Road to Ruta, includes lots of commentary on silver and Bitcoin. He says gold remains the de facto king of currencies, but he is much more bullish, like myself, on silver. We spend a lot of time in this part one of our discussion, hopefully part two next week, on Bitcoin and related cryptos. We talk about latest developments, including Arizona, which is now accepting Bitcoin for state tax payments, knocking down yet another argument that's been used against the viability of cryptocurrencies. And we discussed the thought that Bitcoin may be an unstoppable fiat money destroyer as a computer virus for fiat money. Then Arch Crawford joins me in Crawford Perspectives. He outlines his technical outlook on all the indexes. He is extremely bearish on U.S. equities. And we'd like to field your questions and comments. The Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900. You'll need our mailbox number, 514049. Please jot it down on a notepad or plug it right into your phone. 641-715-3900, mailbox number 514049. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest editorial insights. Gold Seek begins now with a market weather recap. Cloudy skies appeared over the precious metals this week as the U.S. dollar rally put a damper on safe haven investments, as well as some resolution over the potential trade war conflicts as the U.S. administration pulled away from much of the tax ramifications, essentially reducing the impact to global competitors. Plus, stronger than expected employment numbers increased the odds of further rate hikes this year, which also decreased a little bit of demand for safe haven assets. Gold shed 2260, down just 1.7%, finishing at 1327, still holding solidly over support and within tight trading range. Meanwhile, silver gave back exactly 31 cents, finishing at 1627, and the precious metal shares declined only 20 cents, near break even at 8112. Black gold pulled back slightly, and the CRB index tread water. Bitcoin also gave back 3.23, about 24%, ending at 1372. The top story moving the markets, gold marked a third straight quarterly gain as concerns over fourth quarter GDP jumped higher by about 3%, easing some tensions over the global trade war. Media reports indicated the administration's tough trade barriers on steel and aluminum were diluted by exemptions offered as much as 85% of proposed imports. Plus, stronger than expected economic growth was seen Wednesday as the weekly jobless claims came in at the lowest level since 1973, dropping 15,000 down to 215,000. Adding to positive economic indications, household spending showed that the savings rate increased 3.4% in February from 3.2%. The prior month, while consumer spending increased just fractionally. Meanwhile, another key economic indicator viewed by some market watchers as perhaps the most important event in decades, the gold-backed yuan oil contract began trading this week on Monday, the first viable alternative to the petrodollar in nearly five decades. The petrodollar arrangement was the brainchild originally of the Bretton Woods Agreement when dollars were still redeemable in gold, but by 1973 a free-floating dollar replaced the gold convertibility. Fast track to today, and this is a big victory for our trading partner. Officials have made it clear that the exchange is only intended to provide liquidity to support China's petroleum imports for nations like Venezuela and other BRIC nations and competing BRIC nations, as well as disenfranchised countries. They have an alternative to essentially trade their oil for yuan or perhaps even gold. The first contract traded on Monday on the Shanghai Oil Futures Exchange, about 151,000 contracts traded 65 billion yuan, by the third day. Analysts expect China's policymakers to guarantee liquidity and ensure delivery of actual oil within 30 days or less. Precious metals bottom line. Well, despite some profit taking this week on safe haven assets, the CRB commodities sector and black gold held up quite well. And gold shares, I think, held up considering volatility. Plus, the Street Tracks ETF, the top gold miners exchange-traded fund, GDX, experienced its biggest cash infusion in several months. The technical perspective softened on stronger-than-expected inflation numbers, which put some support under the U.S. dollar. Frank Holmes, the chief executive officer of U.S. Global Investors, expects prices for the metal to climb to $1,500 this year, citing inflation growth and dollar weakness. And looking at BTC, the long-term bullish case remains intact, but the 8,000 support failed, which suggests 6,000 lows could be retested. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, sunny skies appeared over the New York Stock Exchange as traders cheered lowered trade barriers among U.S. trading partners and better-than-expected economic numbers. By Friday's close, the Dow Jones Industrials regained 570 points after last week's sharp sell-off, about 2.4%, finishing over the 24,000 benchmark. The S&P 500 picked up 53 points, 2%, ending at 2640, while the NASDAQ added 1%, 71 points, finishing at 7063. Meanwhile, the U.S. stock market posted its worst month in the NASDAQ in over 2 years. According to the Trader's Almanac, April is typically a strong month, though, for stocks over the past 10 years. It's been positive 90% of the time. Hopefully better times ahead for the markets. And given that bullish outlook and the fact that bull markets rarely end quickly in U.S. equities, I've cherry-picked a few of my favorite top online stock candidates from a financial site, the best 4 out of 5. The first topping the list, Fifth Third Bank, FITB, the ticker, a $23 billion Cincinnati-based bank with solid income growth, over 160 years in existence, 2.1% dividend. Next on to Ally Financial, ALLY is the ticker. They pick up the difference between deposits and the charge on loans, also earns 2%. Moving on to the third, it's Intel Corp. INTC, semiconductor with solid growth, good momentum, great technicals, and news that a top AMD executive defected and came over to Intel with the idea of capitalizing on NVIDIA's super profitable GPU market. Lastly, a company from China, Momo, this is an ADR, a mid-cap Chinese social networking and video company with enormous growth. Sales are 50% over last quarter. Earnings have doubled on an annual basis. Shares are just trading at 25 times earnings, which sounds high, but in this market, that is a bargain. Typically, earnings are forecasted to climb 30%. And remember, this is not financial advice, just a few intriguing-looking candidates. U.S. shares, bottom line. Clearly, the potential for a new cold trade war between the U.S. and China eased off somewhat this week. But then we had news that 60 Russian officials would be ejected from the United States, diplomats, and one official warned of a new hot war between the West. However, the technical picture continues to improve with the 7-indicator greed to fear index pendulum so overextended now that it seems like from a contrarian outlook, a rally could unfold at any moment. But then when we take a look at the charts, the price action is not terribly favorable in the near term. So it's a bit too close to call for this middle-aged market watcher. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Welcome, Bix Weir.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
A lot of people were disappointed, obviously, with Bitcoin. Few who are really calling for 20,000. Unfortunately, you know, the crowd always tends to see those price advances. They put it all on their credit cards around Christmas time. They were going to retire, you know, to Crypto Rico with Max and Stacy.
I would say it was more of a planned move by certain people to triple the price of Bitcoin from mid-November to mid-December, and then two, to start the Mt. Gox sales terminal to slow down the price gains. And once you understand that, it's not that hard to just hang on for dear life.
I think you could also make the case that speculators were really excited about all of the upcoming news, right? Because, I mean, it was a forkapalooza, excuse my language, last fall and winter. I mean, we had just numerous forkings or forkenings, if you will. It gets people excited because it's sort of a dividend, and at least early on, could see some really exciting overnight gains for each Bitcoin held. Folks anticipating the derivatives on the mercantile exchange there, the end of the year, that just tends to be a seasonably favorable time for the cryptos. And this time of the year, you know, around March, is over the last 8-9 years, just the doldrums for Bitcoin.
It all depends on the way you look at this. If you look at it as this new form of currency and tokenization of value is really replacing the old system, you know, these things, the hyper-volatility and all that, is easy to sit through and sit back and say, hey, I'm not investing to sell these things for a profit in fiat money. I'm investing because I know that the world is changing and I want to be involved in that change. So yes, it goes up and it goes down. There's a lot of manipulation going on because it's so thinly traded. It is a direct threat to our current manipulated banking system. So you can have bankers and central bankers in there manipulating. But at the end of the day, the cryptos are going to win this battle. And that's the reason it's gone up from a penny to $20,000 in Bitcoin. And then all the other cryptos that have followed on have just so amazingly increased the value of the overall offering of cryptocurrencies and the tokenization of economic systems. It's unbelievable what's happening right now. And nobody really knows about it still. We're still less than 1% adoption.
Firstly, it's abandonment of fiat here in the United States, but it's not just the reserve currency. It's all around the world. So if you're in South America or India or Africa or Asia, you know, there are a lot of regions that obviously don't have the banking infrastructure, don't have access even to ATMs, savings accounts and brokerage accounts. And obviously there is demand. Anybody can walk into a local library could easily access either a wallet of their own, you know, an encrypted wallet, memorize private key, although that's a little tricky. Let's memorize the seeds, right? Let's skip the private key and go right to a seed, a Trezor wallet or something, or a ledger. There's a lot more going on here than just price appreciation FOMO. I mean, there is an actual sea change in the undercurrent of basic economics around the globe. This is a whole new economy, and every new economy has to have its own currency.
Sure. I mean, right now we've got 2.5 billion people on planet Earth that are unbanked, and many of them have cell phones. You know, when you have a cell phone in your hand and you have cryptocurrencies, you are a bank. You don't need a bank. You are a walking bank. And that's an amazing thing. And also, I mean, the big thing that people really don't talk about is the use and abuse of the unbanked fiat system by the world's reserve currency government, the United States of America. We have abused people with this unbanked fiat system for so long. And if you read books like Confessions of an Economic Hitman, you get the idea that other countries really didn't have a way out of, you either played by the rules or you get taken over by the United States. Now there's a way out, a new economic system that is outside of the banking system that is growing up in parallel with the old system. So as the old system crumbles, we can more easily transition to this new system. It's an amazing invention. We'll literally free humanity from the chains that we're in right now.
Of course, we've had John Perkins on the show. He's just a brilliant talent, a true humanitarian, and he obviously recognizes that there were a lot of liberties taken in all of our names, because we understand that at the heart of this, there are several primary value creation systems. Firstly, you have a remarkable protocol. I mean, it was like it was created by an artificial intelligence from Alpha Centauri or the D-Wave quantum computer. Obviously, proof of work, okay, which comes from our hashing our SHA-256 algorithm, which we're all probably becoming familiar with. And this gives you assurance, the proof of work, that you have the ability to overcome attacks, right? You have 51% attack. And so that's one component. Then, of course, we forget maybe the most important, that's the consensus component, which is key to the integrity of the ledger, the Byzantine general argument, one of Satoshi's breakthroughs when we bring this all together. So, I mean, this is an incredible value system. Let's ignore the fact for a moment that the top developers in the world, some of the sharpest minds, are on top of this, and they get very little attention. Like, these folks have made incredible strides that most people have missed.
The key, I think, is that, one, the consensus protocol means everybody gets to approve every transaction. And that's really the key to what makes the blockchain work. And when people say, well, Bitcoin and the cryptos aren't backed by anything, they're absolutely wrong. They're backed by mathematics. They're backed by the fact that you can't cheat, you can't lie, you can't steal. It's an honesty machine. It is such a breath of fresh air from our current system. Now, many gold bugs will argue, well, gold is an honesty machine as well. Perhaps it is based on honesty, but it's definitely not a machine. It is definitely clunky. You got to carry it around. You cannot transact business long distance using only gold unless you ship your gold via a big ship and carry it, and there are problems with that. The other big thing to me that the gold bugs and silver bugs who want to return to a gold and silver standard don't really understand is that that would mean changing the minds of humanity, of 7 billion people on planet Earth, to say that gold and silver are your only options, when they are all sitting there with iPhones that are already making payments via their credit cards or whatever they want. When they go into Starbucks, they have a Starbucks card. People get that concept. Now, I think a very big part of this transition is going to be a loss of faith in the old system. And then, do we really trust anybody after, say, Deutsche Bank goes down and sets off the derivative implosion? No, nobody will trust anybody. That's why you don't need to trust Bitcoin. It's based on math. It's an honesty machine. It's called a trustless system, meaning that there's no human beings you have to trust. All you have to trust is that 2 + 2 will always equal 4. And that is such an amazing breath of fresh air. Gold, I love gold. I think there's a lot more gold than people say. But remember, who owns the gold right now? It is mainly the bankers, the central banks, and the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. If you want to go back onto a gold and silver standard, you're going to have to pry that gold out of their hands, and that will leave them, once again, the richest, most powerful people in the world. So that system won't work either. I am a huge fan of silver in the industrial uses. I think we will need silver going forward as a tool for a high-tech future in the industrial space, but not as a form of money. I think the cryptos are much, much better way of looking at money, of transacting business, of storing value, and of using cryptos as like a barter system in a tokenized economics. It's really cool stuff.
It is. I'd like to touch on this idea of trust, because I think it's maybe the most important aspect of this revolution, okay? The crypto sphere that's emerging. You may have read in physics lately, one of the greatest breakthroughs is the understanding about the holographic universe aspect, whereas no matter what size a sphere you have, it doesn't matter if it's a tennis ball or a sphere the size of a star, let's say our solar mass, it all holds the identical amount of information from a holographic perspective. Maybe the greatest breakthrough since, I don't know, special relativity. Let's take that for a moment and apply it to this cryptosphere, a trustless aspect. How could trustlessness be so good? I mean, don't we want trust? It really comes down to we've been trusting in a third party, an intermediary, for all of our transactions, not just monetary, balance sheet, financial ledgers in your community, your county, your state, wherever it is, birth certificates, voting, if you will. I mean, there's a lot of trust issues going on there we've seen in previous elections, okay? One of the more compelling aspects of this revolution, our faith in this algorithm, due to our faith in the math. We understand, when we add in the proof of work aspect we talk about, that we don't have to trust any one party. And there's no centralized location. So, for instance, if Bix Weir becomes president of Bitcoin, we don't have to worry about the system being broken down because he's hauled into Congress to explain his digital money, you know, this magic money you all are playing around with. We have a trustless thanks to Satoshi Nakamoto, that eliminates the third party. So you eliminate, obviously, the centralization. That's a big concern. And maybe just important, you have an efficient system so those people you talked about, not just in New York City and California and you know, Texas and around the United States or Europe, but folks who never had access to any financial means whatsoever, find a outdated iPhone 5 and suddenly have a few thousand Satoshi, and they can be part of a digital economy that they had been disenfranchised from. Wouldn't you agree?
I do agree. And you know, the whole concept, at first when I heard the term trustless system, I thought, oh great, a system with no trust. That's not what it means really. What it means is that currently we have to trust all kinds of things, all kinds of third parties to stay intact and trust that they're not going to abuse the system. They are abusing our system. The third parties, the central bankers, the banking cabal, they rig the gold markets, rig the silver markets, rig all that stuff. And they almost still, even after they rigged everything, they can't control it. In 2008, we were hours away from losing every single unbacked electronic asset on planet Earth. Now we don't have to worry about that. Well, we do to a point that they're going to lose all trust from mankind when they implode the system again. And we know it's going to implode again. It's just a matter of when. And once trust is lost, who can you turn to set us up a new system? Nobody. You can't trust anybody after they take everything from you. That's why the beauty of the blockchain, a trustless system, means you don't have to trust anybody other than your understanding that 2 + 2 will always equal 4 is all you really have to trust. And then that system works because of the consensus protocol, because everybody is approving every transaction, keeping everybody honest. And that's what the blockchain really is. It's an honesty machine.
Some of the detractors' key concerns. Okay, one of them, hashing those SHA-56 algorithms, you know, I mean, that's just using up the world's electricity. I don't know, 2030, 2040, it will consume the entire electricity of the globe. Okay, look, take a look at Visa, MasterCard, American Express, just a few of the many trust-based algorithms and systems out there. Many fold the electrical output in their daily transactions 24/7 just to give us a centralized system which is riddled with problems. If you've ever been a merchant online, the chargebacks can put you literally out of business and you've done nothing wrong. And then the client walks away with your cash. And of course, the middleman always gets his cut and you're out of business. Enter Bitcoin. No chargebacks to come knocking on your door and say, oh no, we're going to erase that transaction because we favor this other party. You know, just like McAfee says in half of his interviews, you know, I've lost more Bitcoin and more cryptocurrencies than any one of you by clicking the wrong button late night when I was half asleep. And you're a lot more cautious and careful. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, the electricity is the latest reason why Bitcoin will die. But people don't understand that we're dealing in a free market when you're dealing cryptocurrencies. If electricity gets too expensive, they'll figure out ways around it. Number one, the Lightning Network is going to drastically decrease the amount of electricity used. Of course, that you know, you're not told that there will be innovations within cryptocurrencies, but you're also going to see massive innovations in the creation of electricity. When all our controllers are gone and we don't have to worry about them controlling all the new technologies coming forward and, you know, hiding it for national security reasons, we will hit a point where we can create free energy. And that's just part of technology. If technology is allowed to innovate and allowed to move forward without government stopping them, without the deep state stopping it, we're going to innovate our way out of any problems that might come up. And especially if electricity gets really expensive and is using too much, we will invent a new blockchain, a new form of cryptocurrency that doesn't take that. The free market at work.
Talk about electricity. I mean, obviously, unless you're outside of Iceland, China, because they were brilliant enough to mirror early in the last century where we were building dams everywhere. So we would all enjoy free electricity for the most part, or low cost electricity for hundreds of years. A kilowatt per hour here of solar capability on 10, 100 watt photovoltaic units. I remember 20, 30 years ago in the energy crisis when Carter was in office, we couldn't have even dreamed of having a kilowatt of power, totally cost prohibitive. And now I understand my clunky solar panels are outdated. They're now in wafer form. You can, you know, bend them, put them in any crevice of your roof or anywhere around the property. But there's another big concern we've heard from Knocking Down Bitcoin, pointing out, well, look, there's no use case. You can't even pay your taxes with it. And the very definition of a currency, the most important capability for any fiat money is the ability to pay your taxes. Don't try to give me this BitPay turnaround where you're essentially turning it from crypto directly into fiat's a third party. That doesn't count. Latest news out of the Western United States, I think it's Arizona, don't quote me, maybe New Mexico, that's just started accepting Bitcoin state tax payments, shooting down just the latest pillar of negativity against Bitcoin. Your thoughts?
Well, my first thought is always check out the track record of who you're listening to, especially if they're going to try to opine upon the adaptability of the cryptos. You know, anybody who said, it still is on the bandwagon that cryptos will not be the future has clearly been wrong for 9 years now and has clearly, you know, led their followers astray. I hear Peter Schiff is even now accepting Bitcoin in one of his companies. He says he converts it instantly, but that's the process. Once he learns how easy Bitcoin is and how safe it is, he will jump on the bandwagon as well. You know, some people just refuse to ever give up their staunch opinion that it's gold and silver only as a solution. Hey, go for it. It's not going to serve you well in the future, and it hasn't served you well in the last 10 years. When do you stand up and say, oh, you know, I was wrong, and yes, the United States can pass a law today that accepts any cryptocurrency in taxes. It's easy. I mean, that type of thing is something that will happen as more and more people find that dealing in cryptocurrencies is a lot better than dealing with fiat money. And governments will say, oh, there's so much revenue we're missing out on by not being involved. And any country that puts up barriers against cryptocurrencies will find themselves in the dark ages in a matter of years.
That is the perfect segue into the next pillar that they're using to tear down the crypto revolution. Don't you know that it's only bad actors involved in the crypto? Let's go back to 1992. Email and what every other article for the next decade was, this is for nothing but creeps and curmudgeons and folks living in their parents' basements. And now email is as ubiquitous as snail mail in your mailbox. The president is tweeting. This is the typical adoption cycle, you'd probably agree. Kind of like to know where Bixweir thinks we are.
I think we're just passing out of the innovator phase, if you ask me. We haven't even got into early adopters, I don't think.
Yeah, we need that killer app, don't we? Just like AOL. Remember the internet and email? I mean, I have family members still using You've Got Mail today. I mean, 20 years later, I gave that up after 1 year, went straight to broadband. We need that killer app because ultimately, maybe it'll be EOS, maybe it'll be Coinbase. They're certainly doing their best. What type of app do we need here? What's going to be the killer app that transforms Bitcoin into ubiquitous as McDonald's?
Well, first of all, I don't think it will be Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin has said we want to be the store of value gold. So, but other cryptocurrencies, absolutely. And those apps, you know, when you think back 6-7 years ago, it was almost impossible to get your hands on Bitcoin unless you were a miner. So we have come a whole long way to, you know, exchanges have been set up, online wallets, Coinbase has done a lot, but there's still a long way to go. We need point of sale equipment at every Starbucks in the nation. And that type of stuff is like right around the bend. And we need easy wallets to deal with all the cryptocurrencies. Like the Pillar wallet is going to be a huge one when it gets adopted, when it gets implemented. A lot of this stuff is, you know, they raised money last year in an ICO and they're just waiting for the technology to develop and get it into the hands of the people.
Let's head back to 1998, 99. You'll remember the Comcast days. Everybody, when do we get broadband in our neighborhood? We don't know what we're going to do with it. We know we want it. I mean, we haven't even quite hit that point yet. But when you cross that, the moment where true adoption can take place, First, it was Netscape, and Andreessen made a gazillion dollars. And by the way, he's back in with Peter Thiel. They're the financiers and the driving forces behind the innovation. I know everybody, you know, disparages them. The parents of the new crypto revolution were, maybe it'll be each iPhone and Android app that's already built in, Bix. We just swipe this when we go through the drive-thru or Walmart.
There's nothing really stopping technology to put a Bitcoin mining app on a phone. So anytime your phone's connected to the internet, it's mining for micro amounts of Bitcoin. But I would think the real use case for cryptos to really get adapted, to get out of the innovator phase into the early adopter phase and into the public's hands, you need that use case to have a reason. So when the banks have a wobble and no, you can no longer use a credit card or your Apple Pay at the counter of a Walmart or whatever it is you're using it for, when the banks go down, absolutely the crypto use case will go through the roof. And everybody be looking, I can't use my bank card anymore. What are we going to use? There's the crypto standing there ready to be implemented. And then so much money will go into the development of the point of sale stuff. Every single retail outlet will have to have a crypto. Well, they already have it, really. Cashier has a cell phone. They can accept crypto payments. So it is an interesting thing. It really comes down to use. The largest country where they search the most for the word Bitcoin is not the U.S. and it's not in China. It's in Nigeria where the majority of the people unbank. And that's just, these people have a need for this stuff badly. And I think the need factor will come into the United States very soon, the next time we have a banking hiccup, which I think is, could be this year, it could be next year, but it is coming.
First thing I want to touch on is the adoption outside the U.S., because clearly it's outside of the West where this is needed the most. We don't need it here yet, and I think you have made that clear in the Kaiser Report. Stacey and Max have done a great job there making it clear. Look, that's one of the reasons why the big folks here aren't excited yet. Look at cell phones, right? iPhones, mobile phones. You saw countries that had no electricity in place, no centralized electrical sources, virtually no broadband internet, few cell towers go up. Everybody has got a mobile phone. They can check the web. They can check stocks. They can do internet commerce. They can sell on eBay and Amazon all of a sudden. Let's also address the idea, though, that we were kind of getting to, and that, well, governments are going to shut it down. Really? You're going to shut down a decentralized system with no centralized place to haul people off who want free, good, solid money to liberate the people from the shackles of endless warfare, financial fees. Tried to shut down the internet in several Asian countries. Over 100,000 people stormed the streets. They had email before the next day. Everything restored, everything back on. You can't shut the internet down. Well, lo and behold, that's the backbone of crypto revolution. They're going to regulate it. What do you see as a regulation hurdle we have to overcome?
It all goes back to my GATA days when I argued and showed how there is a fight between what I call the good guys and the bad guys behind the scenes. The good guys wanting to get rid of the bad guys who are controlling our system currently. You know, just because you have a government doesn't mean it has to be have the worst intentions for you, even though we've been under that system for a long time. What they have been trying to do is figure out a way out of this current system and into something new without killing off half the population. You can't crash the banking system and just start fresh. And I've been arguing that the cryptocurrencies are an amazing solution that people within the United States are working to help and foster because they're not passing regulations. And then we had a testimony from the new CFTC head, a guy named Chris Giancarlo, when they were talking about cryptocurrencies, and he was absolutely positive, saying we need to protect this type of economic system. This is not going away. We're not going to put the genie back in the bottle. We need to pass laws to protect this type of innovation, not destroy this type of innovation. Bix was right. There are people back there trying to help us along, to move us into a new system without killing half the population. And so everybody who says, you know, I've been hearing that FUD since my GATA days, that the government's going to come steal your cryptos and the government's going to come steal your gold and silver, I would say no.
You make a great point, but you may have also seen Keen Terras at the SEC. As I understand it, he's one of the key folks who just gave a speech at the Washington, D.C. crypto conference. Well, he said, you guys just need to regulate yourselves. One of the top regulators in Washington, we don't have the manpower. You know, you need to have your own watchdog. They haven't put two and two together yet. They think it's a silly little, what are those little coins from a Nintendo days? You know, Mario's trying to accumulate, and they're not even on board. They can't even agree. Is it a commodity? Is it an asset? Is it a security? They had every opportunity, in my humble opinion, to quash this movement, but in their hubris and arrogance in their ivory tower, it's almost like something has been unleashed from the CDC, and it doesn't have an exponential infection rate, but it has a 99% kill rate to fiat money. It's a computer virus for fiat money. And they're dancing around it saying, oh, sure, guys, play with your little funny money. Uh-huh, sure. Isn't that cute? Why don't you tell people more about what they can find out at Road to Ruta?
Lately, I've been doing a lot of work at the Road to Ruta YouTube channel and put out almost video a day talking about cryptos, talking about gold and silver, talking about our government. Check me out there, or you can go to roadtoruta.com and find any of the 3,000 articles I have posted there that I've written over the years. It's a good time. Come check it out.
Crawford combines technical analysis with planetary alignments. He's been at the helm of Crawford Perspectives. How's the weather today in that part of Arizona?
Well, it was a little cooler with a high yesterday of about 75. So it's been running 80, but it's been running well above normal.
We would be tickled to have that weather here. I mean, we haven't seen volatility like this. What do you see?
The volatility has been unusually low for 2 to 3 years. I don't think that's normal. And I think we need a little volatility for a while in order to balance things out. I'm leaning towards having more of it in the near future.
So can you give us some specifics on what the charts and what the constellations are telling you?
One of the things happening right now is that we're getting fairly oversold on the short-term basis. So a bounce could occur any time. However, we're starting back lower again in the new highs minus new lows, and we're starting from a very low level, which means that we may be headed for a capitulation phase in the next few days. It's odd that we would be dropping into a three-day holiday. Normally it rises into the to three-day holidays. That's the normal pattern, but it does. So anyway, maybe we will have a capitulation after we come back from Easter and Passover.
That's a good point. U.S. national holidays, religious or otherwise, tends to give the bulls a boost. In fact, I would wager that if you were to just invest time those periods, maybe, let's say 10 times out of the year, you'd probably beat the market almost every year.
That's probable. Actually, the original student on it was, the writing on it was done in late 60s or early 70s. The behavior of prices in Wall Street. And that was author, what's his last name? I don't have it in front of me, so I don't. He was a good friend, although much older. I met him in the Cycles group in New York. He did a lot of the original studies that are carried out now by who is the one that's doing a lot of the statistical reporting on it every time somebody asks some major thing, and they'll give the statistics on it.
Oh, there's so many, aren't there now, Arch?
Whose son is running it now, and they publish all the data. I miss Joe Granville, Richard Russell, and more recently, Ian McAvity. And it doesn't have to stop here. It could rally tomorrow, last day before the three-day weekend, or it could drop more. But I had to bet or better, I think it's 50 on the plus side for tomorrow, but I don't think it'll last, and we are remaining short since January the 15th, but without using margin.
My gut instinct here, Arch, would be to really consider tapering some of those shorts, covering at this point. I'm, of course, not telling anyone what to do, not financial advice. We were talking yesterday, of course, about the USA Today, one of my fear to greed indicators, and it was one of the lowest levels last Friday. When I talked to you, it was even lower, and from a contrarian perspective, folks are so frightened. The smart money is getting greedy, judging by just that one index alone, and it does have several key metrics you might be familiar with, you know, the put to call. You know, bull markets rarely give up that easily. From my perspective, sure, we may have seen the peak, although I don't believe that yet. And the smart money, I shouldn't say the smart money, but the real wealth is still bullish. And I think that until that changes, I believe that the markets will roll over, as we saw in 2006 through 2008.
The planetary stuff, April, looks like we could be in serious wartime status.
That thought has crossed my mind, particularly with the events that occurred, geopolitical events over the weekend. You may have seen that the fearless North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, evidently, although it's not official, may have made a super train ride, if you will, all the way to China. And say, these sanctions are really starting to hurt. My people are getting upset. I'm probably going to have riots. Something is fishy. China is, as you know, incredibly upset with the administration. $50 to $60 billion in U.S. tariffs. That could, as everyone knows by now, lead to an international trade war. Very few people are going to benefit from that. And we're looking at $5 or $6 billion in retaliatory trade barriers from China, of course, following our announcement. Folks, keen to hear your thoughts on the precious metals sector. Yeah, beautiful breakout in gold last week. Is that just a one and done?
It never broke and it never closed above the break. So I'm still waiting to be long on it. I would keep a long-term position at all times, or have some options or something, just in case.
You have to admit it's a lovely chart pattern, both of which had sympathy plays along with gold. What we may have seen last week at least paralleled somewhat the remarkable advance we've had in the crude oil market, particularly on news of the yuan, gold and yuan oil-backed trading now in Shanghai. Crude oil seems to be holding up the commodity CRB index almost independently.
It has the whole range of oil and energy products, of course. But the only other thing that I would mention right now is the rates on the 10-year are breaking down today. And that suggests that they're not going to have as many raises this year as they're talking about.
You are right. The Fed funds futures rate over at the St. Louis Fed, I like to keep, despite the fact everybody talks them down, they're fantastic statisticians. They've got some great numbers. The May meeting, there's virtually zero chance of a rate hike, a 2.1% chance. But currently, though, we've got almost 80% odds of a June hike, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see one more hike to 2.25, 225 basis points in December. Probably not November, but December. But
it's fairly serious. In other words, it has to negate the breakdown in order to raise the rates again.
Well, it's a great segue into another hypothesis I have. There is a fellow by the name of Wolf Richter who is gaining a lot of momentum in the underground economics field. He's out in California. Brought a couple of statistics to my attention that I've been watching closely. Defaults on U.S. single-family homes turning the corner for the first time since the last Great Recession.
It's swinging a little bit.
That number, combined with the Case-Shiller, and then my very favorite, of course, is new home starts, probably the best leading indicator of all three. If you look at the Case-Shiller, and you may have had a chance to see this, the median home price in the United States has actually eclipsed the former bubble peak of 2006. Well, the echo bubble now is even more intense. Nothing, of course, compared to Canada, where we've seen virtually, Jim Sinclair refers to a ram's horn style ascent in prices. Although we don't have the debt, the subprime and Alt-A debt levels that we saw circa 2007, 2008, I do think we would be much more vulnerable to these rate hikes now. Any thoughts?
Well, I agree.
Anything else in the markets you're watching?
I think that's the main thing that I have, that the dollar index broke down a while ago below a huge neckline, but it hasn't been able to put on a leg down yet. But it neither has it been able to break back above that neckline, which it has to get up to 90 on the dollar index that's traded before it will negate some pretty heavy negatives. But they may try to take it up a little bit here in order to take some stops out before they go down more. But
I've noticed a trend in the USD. That's, of course, the U.S. dollar index in particular. They may be the most manipulated of any market. Everyone talks about gold and U.S. shares. I notice that they tend to be manipulated. You're not convinced they're going to take rates too much higher because they have already scared the bull a little bit on Wall Street, and who knows the reverberations through the global financial arena if rates were to go too much higher, because we all know by now, with this inordinate debt, none of which was really cleared out following 2009. They didn't allow the forest to be cleared, did they? The underbrush, it's still there just looking for a rogue match. There's really very little. In fact, you might say there's more refuse now than there was in debris than before. The Fed's balance sheet is frightening. Everybody's talked about how they're curtailing it, but in my opinion, it's just a tiny little blip on a logarithmic chart.
Hasn't showed up clearly in the statistics yet. In other words, like you say, it's been minutia.
And it's ironic because we now have Mnuchin in the Treasury Department. Mnuchin and his minutia. All right, Arch Crawford, we're going to leave you on that witty note. And as we wrap up, why don't you tell people more about Crawford Perspectives? You know, you have at least over four decades at Crawford Perspectives.
41 years in the 24th of May.
Tell people about the services you provide, please.
I have a newsletter that's been on the market for 40 years now. It's the same price it was in 1977, which is $250 a year. It's four pages a month. It's fairly concise. It has charts and easy explanations, but it is based on technical market analysis largely, and with planetary cycles thrown in as the gravy.
We appreciate that special Crawford Perspective sauce. Talk soon, Arch.
Oh, sure. Delighted to be here.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. The ability to hide the effects of inflation have pretty much run their course and have hit a brick wall. A few weeks ago, I took my wife to a steakhouse chain we hadn't frequented in some time. I ordered what ended up being a pretty sad serving of coconut shrimp for my appetizer. The last time I visited this steakhouse, the shrimp serving was plentiful, large, and full. This time it was scarce, tiny, and unsatisfying. The price hadn't come down, but the quantity and quality certainly did. Somewhere in the hierarchical structure of this steakhouse chain, a decision was made to not raise the price of the coconut shrimp, but rather, instead, to substitute size and quality, hoping patrons wouldn't notice or wouldn't care. I noticed, and I care. I'm guessing that when you see the encroachment of inflation into the things you like, that you care, too. I didn't raise a fuss about it when it happened, valuing the time with my wife more than someone's bad management decision. But I remembered, and next time I will vote with my feet and simply go somewhere else. then in the coming months and years, I will not be surprised if I see that profits are weak and layoffs are growing. At a steakhouse chain I used to frequent, but no longer do. Because by then many more patrons will have had less than stellar experiences. All because of the slow, surreptitious onslaught of inflation. And management's continued habit of denying that inflation by whatever means possible. Until people really start to notice it. And it does matter. But by then, it will be too late. Any meaningful discussion of inflation must always be looked at relative to the people it will impact and how they will respond. Inflation is going to become a bigger problem than most people anticipate. The newly appointed Fed Chair, Jerome Powell, recently unveiled his first interest rate increase. This represents the sixth consecutive rate hike and impacts the terms under which you borrow money and access credit. Lots of people still stick their head in the sand saying it's only 25 basis points. But a quarter point here, a quarter point there, pretty soon you're talking real money that has to come out of your budget. Credit cards have variable interest rates which directly and immediately tie them to the actions of the Fed. Experian reports that the average American has a credit card balance of $6,375, a year-over-year increase of 3%, and total credit card debt has surpassed $1 trillion as of 2017. That 25 basis point increase will tack on another $1.6 billion in finance charges for 2018. Mortgages are rising, too. The average 30-year fixed rate has reached just over 4.5%. Adjustable rate home equity lines of credit and mortgages are going up as well. A recent CNBC article provided the example of how a 25 basis point increase would cause borrowers with a $50,000 home equity line of credit to see a $10 or $11 increase in their next monthly payment. A quarter point on a $25,000 car loan equates to roughly $3 a month. But remember, this is the sixth rate increase. So multiply these increases by not 1x, but rather by 6x, and begin to add them all together. Now factor in how cash you hold only earns an annual percentage yield of 0.07%, resulting in a $10,000 deposit earning you just $7 after 1 year. And you realize how your productive capacity is being eroded from both ends, and how the casualty of this destructive financial process will ultimately be your lifestyle and standard of living. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.